Hello, this is Charles Wiz.
And Tony Silva.
And we are Two Teachers Talking, and this is episode 171, where Tony and I have just said the same things over and over
170
and
times.
Over again, 171 times, or 170 times, and now it'll be 171st time. But this is where Tony and I really try to explore and understand this world of teaching English and teaching English in Japan. And I'd say, Tony, that after 170 episodes, I still don't know anything more than when I started. And interestingly enough, this is our first episode where we're both retired.
We're both. Yes, no Cheryl. Longer. So welcome to the world of the retired. How's it feeling?
I don't know. Today is the first day. Or by when this airs, it will be the first day right now.
First official day, yeah, April 1st.
It'll be the first official day right
and
now.
And this is not a joke, folks. It's not an April Fool's joke.
I'm a joke, but this is not a joke. It's like this big, deep, dark hole that, you know, I feel like, you know, sometimes I'm just like filling it with like fear and dread. And other times there's hope and optimism and, you know, this, you know, belief in the future. Because again, I won't be really retiring. I'll be moving to side projects and things and alternative ways of working to, you know, support my family and figure out how to, you know, for paying for my daughter's education. You know, and education's expensive outside of Japan. That's one thing that has to be said for Japan, education. Or maybe it's just America. And actually, anywhere outside of Japan is expensive now because of the exchange rate. But anyway, so this is episode 171. And in 170, we had Allison Kitzman, Tony's partner, who is now teaching in Mexico. And we talked about the differences between Japan and Mexico. And I think, Tony, you wanted to bring something
up. Yeah, there's one thing that I wanted to bring up and mention, talk about, because we started, you know, again, the intention was to talk about the differences. But as the hour went by, we realized, well, you know, we're talking more about the similarities and the differences. And that kind of stuck with me. And then I had a little bit of a realization. When I, the topic of my master's thesis, long time ago, in an internet fledgling entity and making very slow acceptance in Japan. But that was the topic of my thesis. And one of the conclusions that I came to is that I was studying to see what teachers were doing in the classroom, how were they using the internet and just computers in general? Cause again, a lot of times they didn't have access to the internet, but, and you know, it varied greatly what teachers were doing and not doing, what different schools were doing. But I took a big, hard look at the data and the conclusions that I came to, whether it was the perceived success of the new technology, it wasn't the school. It didn't, the differences weren't from school to school. It wasn't dependent on the facilities that were available to the teachers or the students. The students' majors weren't a factor. Their school year, we were freshman, sophomore, junior, not a factor. The biggest factor in the difference is the teacher.
I knew
it varied from teacher to teacher. And I'm thinking maybe that's what's happening here. So it doesn't, you know, we can add to that list. It doesn't matter if it's Japan or Mexico, but if it's Allison's class, it's going to be very, very similar, whether it's in Japan or in Mexico. And if it's Tony's class, because I have taught a couple of days at her school, I've given presentations there to students and faculty, and I've been a guest lecturer to some of the classes. And yeah, my sense of things was like, this is the same as Japan. Well, maybe because it's me. I don't know. That was just the one thought, the one observation. So for those of you who are still teaching, consider that very, very possible that you make a difference. So I wanted to get that in.
Are you trying to be positive?
I'm not trying. I am positive.
I'm not so sure about that, Tony.
Depends what we're talking about.
Well, I think that there's a certain truth to what you just said, that whoever we are, we bring that into the classroom. But there's no question that I have had, you know, classes that are really interactive and engaged in the students.
Oh, no, they get course.
So it's a combination of what happens. But you're right that – in, you know, it's you who you're carrying around, right? You're carrying your brain around, or your brain is carrying you around,
and you're on the stage,
right? And so, I mean, for so much that
better or worse, and how much as you can try to deflect that, but yeah, that's you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point, though, right? That maybe it's not going to make as big of a difference as we think. Although, I kind of feel like it might, but it might be how, you know, like it's like. About, you know, the acoustics in a room. This may be one way to look at it, you know, that depending on, you know, the students and the dynamic and maybe certain, you know, cultural aspects to it, that how they respond and react to you might be different. But that's an interesting observation.
Okay. Yeah, and that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
But overall, I think it was very interesting to see, to, you know, talking in. I had my own observations, which I didn't talk about a lot last week, last month. But just listening to Allison's comments and her experiences is like, it's not what I was expecting. I expected much bigger differences.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I'll still think about it. But it was interesting.
It might be generational.
Hmm.
That this generation of young people approaches, you know, classrooms differently, but we're talking about such a small data set here, right?
Yeah.
That we really can't extrapolate and generalize very much. So, yeah. Okay, well, that's a great way for me to dive into retirement.
Okay, like, so there we are.
All right. So
welcome to retirement, Charles.
Thank you. Enthusiastically said. Yeah, I don't know where we want to go with this, you know, Tony. Well, so why don't you maybe ask me some questions and I'll react. So everyone, so audience, you know, just today's kind of like a little bit of an exploration of how I'm feeling and reacting, because Tony's already gone through this, and maybe some of you have and some of you are going to go through it. And it's really an interesting thing, but it's kind of talked about, but it's really not. And it's much more intense in terms of what I'm going through internally than I expected. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting thing. But why don't you just ask some questions, Tony, and I'll just kind of riff on those.
Yeah, maybe before the questions, just like, because I don't know, people listen, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or remember. Like my situation is so different from yours. My last year of teaching, this will be fast. My last year of teaching was the first year of COVID. And that last year that I taught, was 100% online. And so that in a way made a little bit of a transition and a buffer for me, even though the retirement had been planned, you know, and actually I taught a year longer than we initially thought I would. But my last year of teaching was 2020, 2021. But then also in our plans was this move to Mexico the following year. So from the teaching to in the classroom to teaching online to being retired, all kind of happened. I mean, there was a lot of things happening, and I was moving to Mexico. So I didn't have a lot of chance to really think that much about retirement. People always ask me, what do I miss? Only the student. It's only the student. It's the only thing I miss. Maybe a little, very little, socializing with colleagues. But again, that was so absent in my last year of teaching that, you know, everything was online. Our socialization was all online. And so now I'm in another continent and everything's online. And only in preparing for this podcast, realized maybe, and maybe this is a product or artifact of me living in Japan for so long. I'm starting to miss not having a role in society. I mean, I don't consider senior citizen or retired person a role, but in Japan, just your role is so important. And, you know, for so long, much of my life, I was a teacher, capital T. Not being a teacher, I have my one student. I do a volunteer teaching thing with a student in Ukraine. And maybe that's amplified by just me having landed in a new country, but not being quote unquote a teacher. It's also a little bit weird. And so, yeah, that's about it. So anyway, Charles, questions. A little bit about, you know, how you're feeling so far. You don't really know. Everything's upside down. You don't really know what's happening. But you talked about, let's look at predictions. Like when I retired, you came out and you predicted that I was going to really miss it. And we laughed about it a couple of months later.
Yeah, way off on that.
how about some? Yeah. Bottom line on my end, it's great. it's everyone talks about how wonderful it is. It's better. It's better. But for yourself, any predictions? What do you see happening? I mean, you talked about some side projects and stuff, and how do you think you're going to make that transition? What's going to happen?
Yeah, not really sure. I mean, there's you know, differences that I do have to keep working just to, you know, take care of the family and things. I went through some interesting things at first. You know, I just want to kind of address some of the things emotionally or, you know, psychologically.
Sure.
But at a certain point, I thought I was really tired of teaching. You know, it was going on for like a couple of years, feeling like, you know, I enjoy it and I get these great moments. But I really feel like, you know, I'm not enjoying it as much. And what finally dawned on me, because I am so slow, I'm so far behind the curve on almost everything. It's not that I'm tired of teaching. I'm tired of teaching a certain kind of student. And that is and that came about because there was just a bunch of cheating incidents that we talked about before. And while dealing with these students who were cheating and are just trying to take shortcuts and were trying to, you know, scam the system, so to speak, then I realized, this is what I'm tired of. Because whenever a student wanted to talk about something during the lunch break or was interested or had, you know, questions about things, I found myself always, you know, enjoying myself. You know, engaged with the students. So the first big discovery for me is that, and I hope this is helpful for maybe other people who might be feeling the same way. It's not that I'm not burned out on teaching. I'm just burned out on teaching students who just have no interest and have like what I would call less than optimal attitudes in the classroom. So that's been real helpful. I found it interesting when you were talking about that, you know, your role in Japan and being defined as a teacher. And I remember the first time where somebody introduced me to somebody and said, oh, he's an educator as well. And I had never thought of defining myself as saying I'm a teacher. It's what I did in a sense. But teacher just felt too narrow. But that when that person said educator, I realized, that's what I am in this all-encompassing thing about teaching and learning and trying to understand education. And it's not just that I go into a classroom and then when I'm done, I come home or I mark papers. But there is this, it's more than a role. It's like an identity. And having that identity narrowed down, let's say, because I will be working part-time at, you know, one school. And then I have, you know, I'm trying to work on doing some getting people published, doing a digital publishing project, which is kind of a very different thing, but kind of interesting. As well as I want to do some workshops for students on things that they're not being taught in.
Yeah, you mentioned that when we were talking before, and that sounds really interesting. Maybe you want to talk a little more about that? Because that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happened was I was teaching at the school where you used to teach, where on the last face-to-face class, because they would allow us to do media classes, which means that I was able to do like on-demand classes, which I thought, by the way, was just great, because some of the stuff I teach just works better on demand because students can watch a bunch of videos. But anyway, on the last face-to-face class, I did a questionnaire and I was curious, usual things. Do you feel like your English improved? Did you feel like your reading improved, abilities, did you have opportunities for critical thinking? Did you, how did this class compare in terms of discussion time? You're using English. But a couple of the questions I had were, what are things you want to learn that your teachers don't teach you, that you're not learning at your university or didn't learn before? And came up some really interesting things. And what's not surprising, though, is one of the things was how to use ChatGPT, like generative AI tools, in a good way, in a way to enhance learning and for research. And I thought that's that school, right?
Yeah,
you have
of
that
course,
kind of
yep.
student. It's not like, how do we use ChatGPT to reduce our workload? But there is part of that. So what I did is I thought to myself, why don't I offer these kinds of workshops? So I sent an email to students inviting them to these free workshops. So the idea is to do like a one-day workshop on particular kinds of skills. And so, for example, how do you use AI tools to do research, to find, the articles you want to read, or is there a good way to do summarizing, for example, summarizing articles, which if you think about it is really no different than just reading abstracts, how to extract ideas, how to use these tools in a way that enhances learning. And I was watching a video, a YouTube, from somebody who I guess would be considered, a specialist in note-taking or second brain stuff, somebody really likes Obsidian, but he does a lot of work with different tools, and suggested this really great idea, which is that you take all your notes, and let's say you handwrite your notes and then you enter them into the computer, or you're taking your notes and you put them into the computer. Then you submit those to ChatGPT, for example, and say, identify the key ideas in my notes or summarize my notes. And I thought about, now that's really interesting, because that's the hybrid approach I've been thinking about, is that how do we combine these tools? Not so that, you say to ChatGPT, hey, just give me a summary of all the current research in, the use of, like incidental vocabulary learning, for example. But instead is, here are my notes. Here are like hundreds of pages of notes all together from the last few years. And let's say that you're a student and you could take all your notes from all your classes. And you could ask ChatGPT to kind of find the connections to help you understand your notes better. So those are the kinds of things I'm thinking of. How do you use ChatGPT, that there's certain AI tools which can find articles for you, kind of like a super enhanced Google search. The other things were, for example, using tools like Zotero, which is a very advanced reference management, note-taking PDF reading system. Critical thinking came up. Students wanted to learn critical thinking skills and advanced presentation skills. There's a few other things. So I thought that, offering workshops and doing workshops for students who want to learn is one thing. The other thing that's driving me is that these are things, let's say, I think that my daughter would have learned at her international school if she were still going. Although my guess is that they're like just, reacting against all these AI tools. But it's a way of saying, hey, maybe for high school students, you know, with good English to say, hey, maybe, you know, your family can't afford or, you know, is not putting you into an international school. But here are some opportunities for you, some weekend workshops that will give you some of the skills and you'll learn some of the things that you might not have learned otherwise. So that's the kind of the idea behind the workshops. You know, there's a, you know, sharing, giving students, you know, exposure to the skills that they aren't getting from their classes. And also just, you know, kind of distributing that knowledge and those skills a little more evenly.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. So let me assume you're just doing with this one university, right?
Oh, I sent out emails inviting those students. And
okay.
Thinking, you know, I'll ask you, you know, if you want to send it out to the teachers, you know. But this right. is something for anyone who's in the Kansai area who's listening and has students and you think there are students who will benefit, we can include the link to the Google form where they can sign up if they want. But
are you open to have other teachers sign up?
You know, if the teachers signed up, I think I would do a separate session for teachers.
Okay. Okay.
Because, just curious.
Sounds like there's probably a lot of things that teachers, like I'm listening and it's like, yeah, I'd like to sit in on this. But yeah, that's maybe something that, you know, you talked about different projects and things and, you know, teachers make money. They should maybe pay you for yours. You can charge for it.
Yeah. Yeah. The difference is I don't want to do these, like, you know, faculty development kind of things or, you know, these workshop – or not well,
just
workshops,
don't,
but,
yeah,
you
just
know,
don't
presentations.
Call it that. Just call it something else.
Yeah, I'll call it something else. But the idea is that I realized whenever I go to things, you know, I want takeaways, right? I you know, theory is fine, but I really want to know, how can I use this? Give me things I can use right away that I can – share with my students that will improve their lives. So the goal of this is to, you know, to really sit back and say, okay, if I do a workshop, these are, you know, I want at least, you know, students or anyone who attends to be able to say, wow, you know, I have like at least five things that I can implement the next time I teach.
And I think, yeah, my thought was like, you know, as a former teacher, it's like, I think I would be able to learn a lot watching you do that and say, oh, yeah, maybe I can do that too. Now that was just my thought.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't think about doing this for teachers, but if teachers wanted to do that, then I should probably ask, you know, I should include a thing in the form that says, are you a teacher? Or are you a student?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. That's a good idea. I didn't think about doing like workshops for teachers, but that's something that came about again, as I said, when I realized it's not that I'm tired of teaching. I'm tired of working with students. And the other thing that's going to happen is sometime, and I think, or this is for anyone in the Kanto area, one of my former seminar students who is a teacher, and he's working on his master's now, and just an amazing young, you know, a man. Great teacher. I had every teacher's dream came true. I got to watch one of my former students who's been a teacher for a while teach one of my classes at the university level. And it was just wonderful to watch somebody because this is an aside and I'm going off the topic, but something I really believe is that I don't really benefit that much from having somebody observe me. Come in and observe me and watch me. But I really, really learn a lot when I watch other teachers working.
Yeah.
No, you know, I would never thought of that. You know, and that's not going to come up when somebody's observing you. But when I watch teachers work, it's like, this person never moves from the front of the room, but they know exactly what's going on. How are they doing that? Or, you know, something like classroom management things or somebody will do an activity in a way that I would never have dreamed of doing that activity. Maybe the order is different or how they introduce the activity or how they set up the activity. So that was really fun. But I was talking with my it's Taishi who was on the show who I interviewed.
The show that I was going to ask if that was the student.
Yeah, it's Taishi. And we're talking. We said, you know, why don't we just – work together and do like a workshop for teachers in the Kanto area, people who, you know, and we both had the same attitude, which is, you know, it's got to be pragmatic, practical, right? These are things you can do and these are things you can implement right away. So that seems to be one of the things I'll be doing. But again, that I'm kind of excited about, you know, having a little bit more control, let's say, over the topics I'm teaching.
Mm. And also the other thing about, you know, the audience, for lack of a better word, but these are students who want to learn. They're not there because they have to be there. And that that selection process is going to make a real big difference. It'll make your day a lot better, I'm sure.
Well, of course. And if somebody's willing to come in on a weekend or, you know, a weekday evening for a couple of hours. Yeah, I, you know, part of me. Yeah, it's a weird thing, this whole thing about motivation, engagement, and I've been really thinking a lot about that. And part of the reason I've been thinking about that, Tony, is I think I mentioned to you that we were talking about there's a tradition at my university where teachers or professors can give a final lecture.
Okay, yeah, this was the next thing I was going to ask you about. Yeah, and I think it's common. It's common in a lot of universities, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't sure. So I, you know, was just being on the safe side. So they asked me, do you want to do your final lecture? And I said, okay, I'll make you listen to me. And I said yes, not because I feel like I have a lot or really important things to share with people, but I needed something to force me to think deeply about a career that's coming to an end. And to think about what do I want to share? So for the last few weeks, once it became decided that I, you know, once it was decided that I would do this lecture, I've been really thinking about, you know, what do I believe? What do I think? How do I feel? How am I different from when I started? And, you know, the other thing that's really strange is I can't remember the last time I gave a lecture. I think it was like 2006, maybe, when I was applying for a job in Hokkaido. And part of the application process is that you gave a lecture to the faculty on your research. Because even when I've done a conference, what are they called? Conference presentations?
Uh-huh.
That I still have used more of a student-centered approach. I got to a point where I actually said, okay, here's a basic introduction. Here's the data I have, or here's the data we have. Take a look, talk amongst each other, you know, and let's see what you guys think. So I haven't given a straight lecture in an incredible amount of time, in a really, really long time. So this is kind of interesting, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it in a interesting way. So that's interesting for the audience, because everybody's like, okay, here we go. We got to listen to this guy talk for an hour. So I've been working on that. And one of the topics that came up for me, because we've talked about motivation, and I really dislike motivation studies since they're all based on self-reporting. And I've used the term engagement. And then, you know, activities have to be engaging. And I think that's a better word to use. But then I started thinking that, you know, what we don't need is motivated students. And what we don't need are engaged students. What we need are students who are addicted to learning. Because we're fighting other kinds of addiction. And the way the brain works, you know, how can we create or how can we help students become, you know, people who just have an incredible drive, like an addiction to learning new things every day. And that's a different way of thinking about things. So I'm using that as an example of how this retirement that I'm about to, you know, enter into is a positive thing in terms of reflection. But of course, that doesn't account for the regrets and things, all the regrets I feel. So that was a long, long, long answer to your question.
And when you talked about this last thing about the sayonara lecture and like the addiction to learning and, you know, just going with that analogy a little bit further. And we talked about like possible topics and things for the lecture and probably multiple topics possibly. And one of the, if you go with like the multiple topics thing, one of them might be, to quote unquote teach or set up a situation where they can learn something is completely unacademic, completely, or it could be, you know, it could be something with Zotero, for example. But, and you talked earlier before, like pull it together, takeaways, right? Some small, silly thing, but something that is like, going to leave everybody that's there is like, oh, wow, I'm going to use that every day. And it could be something like, how do you fold your socks? I mean, it could be that banal, but so, you know, how to fold your socks or, you know, removing a stain or, you know, you can tell me what I'm doing. My daily activities are like, but something like this, something like silly and practical. Like one of the things that, silly things. I don't know where I saw it, but on the net somewhere, a short video, but like it's a Chinese woman, but her, it's somehow translated into English and she's teaching all these driving tricks, driving and car maintenance tricks is like where the like hidden things, like, for example, like with, the electronic controls on of the door handles, like, you know, you have automatics, the car knows that the driver's door is on there, but it's got different modes. And how the car responds, you can control the different modes of like this. And it's like, and you can do it by like, just like the number of like clicks that you do on the door handle. It's like, oh, this made my life much easier. But again, like with like the addition, that idea of addiction. Yeah. Okay. Taste this. Well, have some of this. It's really good stuff.
The first one's free.
The first one's free. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like my workshops.
Yeah, and we can, and you know, yeah, here you learn how to open the car doors and you just let it grow. It's like, okay, you like that? Well, let's learn about this. Let's learn about that and get them hooked on that joy of learning. One way to do it is say that one first fun thing to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was exactly, you know, the term hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we don't talk about, I haven't heard that talked about, getting students hooked on learning, because part of me believes that a big problem or a big issue is that most of the people who are teachers have had positive experiences as learners.
Mm.
And a complaint I have is that almost everybody I work with has never left school. I mean, I know people. I do know people. I think most of the people I work with, you know, in my university, is that they've never been out of school their entire lives.
Yeah, for me, since this, except for one very miserable year in the late 70s, I've always been in schools. Yeah, one way or the other.
Well, I haven't. You know, I've mentioned before that I spent a couple of years hitchhiking in the United States and off to Europe. You know, I worked at a gas station. I worked as a mechanic. I've worked at different jobs. I went to school, quit school, went to school, quit school, came back, finally finished. I mean, since I've been 27, I have been working in schools, except for one year where I decided to work for a company. But from 18 to 27, I had a pretty varied life, different kinds of jobs and not just necessarily being at school. And I think that's beneficial. But the point I'm trying to make is that most of the people who are teaching, they like learning or they like research. And I think that it's easy for us to forget that there are people who have not had positive experiences as learners. And so I've been really thinking about this, you know, hooking students, as you put it, getting students addicted rather than motivating them, because it's a very different approach, I think. You know, motivation, I mean, how do you motivate somebody to do anything? Well, if the easiest way of reg is, you know, carrot and stick kind of thing, intrinsic, extrinsic motivation. But
if we could somehow get a better understanding of, you know, what a dopamine hit's like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Then how do you create dopamine hits in the classroom? So suddenly goes, whoa, that felt really good. And that's their brain really thrilled about learning something. Because I still do remember when I was in high school and I was taking, I think the class before calculus, maybe math analysis, and we were learning about complex numbers. And I'm not going to go into the explanation because I can't remember it exactly, but complex numbers are.
I'm glad you said that because I was
kind of like the square
root. I studied that. I don't remember what that is.
The square root of negative one. And I remember that the teacher showed us how you could take complex numbers and understand them or chart them or visualize them using polar coordinates. And I remember just going, wow. It still sticks in my mind, that feeling of like, wow. You know, wow, wowza, whoa.
And that's for me, that was like back in the fourth or fifth grade where it was the end of the year and I guess the teacher had like ran out of stuff. She says, I'm going to teach you next year's things. And they taught us cross multiplication. And it was exactly just what you said. It was like, huh?
This is neat.
What weird magic is this?
Yeah. But then just a story on the side is that there's the opposite experience, right? Where we're demotivating. I remember when I was in first grade, I remember I hated spelling tests because they were just so boring. I mean, I was a pretty good speller, but they're just so boring. And I remember coming out of first grade, this is a long time ago. Okay. This is like 60 years ago, getting out of first grade and going, thank God, no more spelling tests. And you have no idea how disappointed I was in second grade. I was so disappointed. I think that traumatized me for life. But yeah, the idea of, you know, that wowza, wow, this is neat. I think that we have to try to create, you know, design those kind of experiences. And of course, it's not going to work for every student.
Right.
So, yeah, I think
For us, I think we probably had very similar experiences, like on our own, not a classroom, but like when we were first experiences with computers and the internet, and you had to teach yourself, and then you learned what was happening, and it was magic under your fingers. And that feeling, other people trying to do the same thing, they're just traumatized. And like hate for the rest of their lives, just hate all technology. But like, I think for you and I, that first magical thing is like when you like first spreadsheets, it's like, whoa, look at this. How do I do more? And is that ecstasy of learning that new thing. But yeah, as you said, it's not going to be for everybody else. Everyone's got like a different button.
Yeah. You know, and now I'm wondering whether or not that might be a defining character. Here's a research topic for somebody who's listening out there, is whether or not that, wow, that was neat, you know, that feeling you just talked about,
mm-hmm.
or I talked about with like the polar coordinates, whether mm-hmm. or not having those experiences has some effect or determines how much of a person's learning is going to be done independently and autonomously.
That's a really good study. I think I can intuit the answer, but
right.
that's not how science is done. but yeah, really interesting point.
That so people, and if you think about the people we know, like let's say some of the professors who are doing research, they're basically independent learners. But they've had positive experiences. And then so here's what happens as we go on and we try to teach our students to be independent learners. But they haven't really had any experience, positive experiences of finding things out. So now I'm thinking, need to create more of those kind of opportunities where people can find things out. I think it's Richard Feynman's book, right? The Joy of Finding Things Out. Great
Maybe,
title.
Yeah. Fine.
By the way, that's a fun book to read. He's kind of my hero.
He's good. I haven't read that one. I'm like, you're joking, Mr. Feynman is the one.
Surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but the one about the joy of finding things out has some real gems in it. He has a story about being at the Tennessee Valley Authority but it's too long of a story. I won't go into it.
I bet he's a really good teacher.
He was. I think his nickname was the Great Explainer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
His classes. Because
his books are just phenomenal, right? It just like takes such complex ideas and makes them simple.
He was famous. His courses at Caltech were just incredibly famous for being, you know, like incredible, right? He had that ability to just, you know, take things and be able to explain them clearly, which of course is, you know, I'm not envious of that at all. The Holy Grail. Yeah. So those are some of the things that are going on. And so this final lecture, I'm trying to figure out a way to keep it interesting. I'm sure like six people will show up. But one of the things I told you I think I'm going to do is I was trying to think how to make it interesting for people. And instead of having like just a lecture about a topic, I'm trying to teach myself how to do this right now, is how to create like a game wheel, a digital game wheel using Keynote or PowerPoint that I can put on the screen, you know, on the projector and spin. And it has like a list of like 12 or 15 topics and it spins and then somebody says stop and I push the stop button and wherever it lands, that's the topic I talk about for the next 10 minutes. And then when I have 10 minutes, buzzer goes off, the wheel gets spun again and I talk about another topic. And I thought that's kind of a nice way to keep people engaged and interested and keep it moving. So it's not like one long slog on a topic. Mm. And at the same time, I thought, well, I really need to prepare for this.
It's work. That's the other thing about teaching, right? It's work. It's hard. It's hard work.
Right. But again, it's something that, I'm pretty sure I haven't quite made the decision 100%. I'm about 90% there, but I've been reading and reviewing and going through my notes and writing. And again, interesting proof. I'm treating it as like a final exam. Part of it is like I have, you know, I'll put the topics up, but I have no idea which topics will come up. And to even make it more challenging, I actually thought of having like a second wheel that would be argue for or argue against. And so, for example, let's say one of the topics is, accuracy versus fluency. And then, you know, or accuracy is less important than fluency. And then it spins and it's either argue for or argue against. And I have to take whatever stance the wheel of fortune, so to speak, just chooses. And I thought, this is an example of an exam that is a learning experience. It's forcing me to bring things together. So it's not just an exam to prove what I know, but it's a challenge for me and forcing me to think and synthesize information in different ways. So for any teachers out there, again, who else would be listening to this? And if you're not a teacher and you're listening to this, you have too much free time. But I get that experience now of, a test that really forces me to think and engage with what I know, it feels meaningful.
It seems masochistic, especially in front of other people. It sounds like something that I'd like to do to my students, not something I want to do to myself.
Right.
Yeah, I would go simple and just go with the one layer. The other one sounds really good. It sounds very interesting, but maybe not the venue for that.
Yeah, well, part of it is – again, the risk. And
it's
the old show don't tell thing, mm-hmm. right? The mantra for writing stories or making films or anything. And that is, first off, part of what I want to do is say that, you know, we have to teach students to take risks because learning is taking risks. So I want to show that I'm taking a risk, that this could really bomb or this could really succeed, but I'm willing to try. But the other thing, again, and something I've really thought about, and that we talked about this before, is the need for some kind of randomness. you know, some kind of controlled chaos in the classroom to enhance learning, that there's that surprise, that there has to be something that comes up that forces our students to actually think through and how to integrate something. And this is a demonstration of randomness, how randomness and some kind of chaos can possibly lead to some kind of insights, because I won't know where things are going and I have to riff on the topic. So I'm trying to demonstrate, you know, that we, you know, maybe we control our classes too much, because, you know, when I know that whatever I've like learned any Japanese or I learn a phrase, that suddenly I get stuck into a real situation where I have to use it, things don't work the way that they worked in the classroom or in the practice session. Right. And we know that our students say that, that it's really hard for them to use the language when they go traveling.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm trying to, you know, show that, demonstrate that, and, you know, kind of give an example to people. I'm hoping that some younger teachers will show up and that maybe that'll have a positive effect, because, you know, my daughter Sophie, who is now in her final student teaching segment at her university, and she's been on the show 2 times, she was telling me that just like in Japan, she has to write out these extensive lesson plans that are basically almost like minute by minute. And so what we've done is, you know, you know, we're, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's not minute by minute, but, you know, it's pretty detailed.
Yes. And we know, we know what you mean. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, we're teaching people, remove the chaos, remove any variability, remove any randomness from the lesson. And I'm beginning to think that the best lessons I've taught were when something came up and the students and I ran with it.
Yep.
So, again, that's kind of, you know, my little goal is to say this is probably the most important thing I've learned. You know, is we need more randomness. We need more chaos. We need more spontaneity. We need more adaptation, improvisation in the classroom and in your teaching. And stop, you know, figure out where you want to go, but do not be, you know, controlled by a script that you can't deviate from. So, yeah. So absolutely. That's what's happening there.
Okay. So, stepping back a little bit more general, retirement, what aspect of it are you most looking forward to?
Most looking forward to? No meetings. By the way, that is the like most common response to that question. When I've asked to the people who've retired, I said, what's the best part of retiring? They go, no meetings.
Yeah.
It's like, no meetings. I'm looking forward. Well, again, I have a lot of projects I want to do. Right. I don't feel like I'm ready to stop working, because I do like working. I like being busy. I'm looking forward to learning how to play the trumpet. I used to play saxophone, and I played for a while, but I couldn't play. I can't play saxophone in our apartment because it's so loud. And at least a trumpet, you can mute it. But I bought a trumpet and then didn't realize how hard it is to play a trumpet. Saxophone's easy. So there's that. Spending more time, I think, writing. I'm hoping, or my daughter's expected to come back to Japan, and she's going to be working. She wants to be a manga artist. And so I'm real happy that she'll be spending a couple of years really working on that. But the idea of going traveling with her, for example, if she has an open schedule, and seeing more of Japan and getting to know Japan better. Interesting thing, Tony, when you talked about asking me what happened is, I was talking with my wife, and, you know, we've said, okay, so this is where we're going to stay. We're not going to go back to America. We're not leaving Japan. And I said, it's home now. Because there was always this thing that I was here in Japan and I would leave when I would retire. And when I was in America, it never quite felt like home to me. I always wanted to get out. So almost for the first time in my life, I had this feeling of, oh, I'm home. I'm going to be staying home. So that was an interesting feeling. That was like, whoa, okay, I haven't felt this before. You know, reading more, I think. But just trying to work on, for example, making some, you know, YouTubes and putting those up. I have, you know, some ideas, trying to finally come up with the courage to actually try to be funny and, you know, wondering whether or not I should just make a, try to make a funny, you know, YouTube channel. I think those are the main things, but I really see these workshops, doing these workshops. I'm really excited about that.
That sounds very, very interesting. Very yeah. interesting.
And then, and trying to develop that into a business, right? Where, you know, and where it's a really good price for people, right? It's not, you know, a lot of money. Like, you know, if I can get like, you know, 25 people to pay 5,000 yen for one day and do one of those a month or something, that would be great. I'd be really happy with that. The digital publishing, that is something I've been trying to learn how to do. And the idea behind that is having a place where teachers can actually publish their, you know, textbooks that are actually reviewed, but they're online and they're available only online, which means they can be adapted. We've talked about this before, lot of things. So those are probably the two main projects. And then the third thing is like a YouTube channel for maybe students, you know, teaching them skills and things like this, going through all the different things that we're doing. So yeah, I'll keep staying busy and trying to relax a little bit and maybe, and hopefully not make my wife too crazy. So, and I'm looking forward to having time with my daughter, you know, hanging out with her because I find her to be a really interesting person. And I'd want to go to museums more. I want to see more artwork and maybe, you know, some concerts. You know, I haven't gone to like, you know, concerts or any, you know, live performances in an incredibly long time. So those are some of the things I'll be doing during retirement. And I guess we'll be continuing our podcast.
Yeah, yeah, for a bit.
For a bit, at least.
For a bit.
One of these
nothing lasts forever. What, okay, so that's what you're looking forward to now to get to the dark side. What are you afraid of? Silence.
What am I afraid of? That my plans don't work out, that these projects don't pan out, that so for example, right, I find out that nobody's interested in coming to a workshop that I'm teaching. That's really scary. You know, when it's something like that is optional, it's like
that is always very hard. That always right? very hard. You're putting yourself out there, and when it's not, you know, well received, that's very, very hard. That's scary.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of used to that from, you know, teaching at universities. I mean, in a sense, I was going through my evaluations, and it seems to be that when I looked through over the years, it's like 1/3 of the students really like me. 1/3 of the students really don't like my teaching at all. And 1/3 are like, they're okay with it. So, you know, so that's not surprising. But you know, finding out, let's say that maybe I'm not as good as I thought, you know, finding disappearing and not having any collegiality, but there's not that much in my university anyhow, because I don't talk to that many people. Finding out that I'm just a blank, mediocre brain. You know, if I start writing things or if I start making, let's say, some videos or trying to be creative and do things and then find out that, oh, you're not very good at much, are you? Scared of that. Really scared of that. And scared that I won't be able to fix my regrets from life. Because I don't understand people who say they have no regrets. I have so many regrets and so many things I would want to fix. And, you know, this is the time to start trying to fix those things. And if I'm not able to fix, you know, like, you know, people, let's say, who I treated not properly, things I said, things I didn't do, I wasn't careful about, having to face that in myself. Because I think that the idea of, you know, after so many years of teaching, I've been teaching since I'm 27, so it's really 39 years, and to think, well, did I, you know, what did I really accomplish? What did I really achieve? You know, I think I affected some students positively, but did I do my best? Could I have done better? So going forward and then, you know, saying, well, you know, I guess you're mediocre, you're not that good. Okay, there's that. I think the biggest fear is to find out that I'm not funny. You know, if I try to do something funny and that. So that's kind of the fear going forward.
I'm gonna insert that like Goodfellas scene into the podcast at that point.
Which
you know
scene?
That scene, right?
Well, it depends.
What do you mean? I'm a funny guy.
Oh, that's
you think I'm a clown? I amuse you?
Oh yeah, the Joe Pesci.
Yeah,
that's a truly frightening.
That's scene. A great scene. It's a great.
It's such
scene.
A great scene for anyone who doesn't know. Yeah, it's like one of the really famous scenes from the movie Goodfellas.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the movie, go see the movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. And I had another question right at the tip. Oh, it's a little bit of it's tangent. Are you a journal person? Do you keep a journal?
You know, I kind of do, kind of don't, kind of do, kind of don't.
Okay. Because I think just as like
from someone who was retired earlier,
when I just about, I think when I was, it was probably before I retired, I was still doing the teaching online. And I just realized, okay, this is kind of a pivotal moment in my life. Probably because I write. I'm a writer. I'm a teacher. I'm a writer. It's probably not a bad idea to like jot down some ideas. And so I kind of like you. There's a place and, you know, it's not daily. It's at all. Like, for example, on the plane, one of the things I do on the plane, yeah, is I put in the earphones and it's like, okay, reflect a little bit, order another drink, and then, you know, jot down some thoughts, like what's happening. This is, you know, and for me, it was always like the end of a semester, the end of a school year. It's like, okay, how did that go? You know, what's going on? What's next year going to be like? What's changed? What's the same? What sucks? What's great? All that stuff. And, did that then. When I'm approaching retirement, I says, yeah, I should probably do that a little bit more often. And, I find it, and I'm very happy that I did, because I look back and I look at what I wrote when I was preparing to move to Mexico and what I wrote when I first got here. It's educational. It's really interesting to go back and see what my thoughts were, what my feelings were about what I was experiencing at the time. That can become valuable, I think. So I would – anybody else that's ready to retire to think about that, and for you too, Charles, because it's again, we talked about things that are, you know, off mic, off the show, things that we are aware of, things we're not aware of. And so we're moving through, you know, you're going through like right now. I mean, like it's, you're going through a very, very rapid change, and it maybe doesn't feel like it, doesn't seem like it, but get those thoughts on paper. And when you look at them a year or two from now, I think, you'll be happy to be able to go back and see what was in your head at the time. So my little bit of a tangent there for not for you, but anybody, like, you know, getting up there, getting ready to hang it up.
Yeah, I do write and I do journal. In fact, when I do that kind of journaling, I tend to do it by hand.
Okay. Yeah. And I understand that.
It's handwritten. It's not put onto the computer. I mean, I'm always entering notes into the computer and ideas and things like that. So, yeah, I should be a little more diligent. And that's something I'm hoping, you know, is, again, developing that habit of waking up in like a good hour of writing every day in the morning. But I forgot to mention one other little project that I'm scared to do, but I'm really thinking of trying to do it. And
you know, learning how to use video, you know, video using a camera to make videos. And I had this idea for a documentary that of just interviewing teachers, and it was called The Sadness of Teachers.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah. We talked about it.
We talked about this. And the idea is that, you know, to just interview teachers about not just, you know, the happiness, but to find out, you know, what are the things that have made you sad? Because I have some ideas, you know, some hypotheses about that. And I just want to interview people. So, by the way, if anybody wants to volunteer to be interviewed, send an email to our email at twoteacherstalking@gmail.com. But, you know, that's another thing, again, that I want to try is to develop, like, you know, skills and try to become, you know, somebody who can make, like, a reasonable video, you know, develop those skills. You know, and I have all sorts of other kind of things I want to learn, you know, tools I want to learn how to use, you know, whether it's like, you know, for live streaming OBS or making things, et cetera, et cetera. So, but yeah, the journaling is a good idea and it's something I've done and I review. But the problem with my handwritten journals, Tony.
Yeah, you can't read them.
Read my hand.
I know. That's why I can't do that. I can't do that because I sit there and write, especially by the end of the day. It's like, It's just like, what does this mean? what are these strokes here? I don't know how to deal with this is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, what's even happened, if I type it, I can't read it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, what happens is that when I'm doing the writing, it's kind of basically free writing. And I find out that, you know, I come up with ideas that I didn't think about and the ideas are still fresh and then I'll enter them into the computer. But yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting process.
Yeah, I can't read my notes. I can't read my journals. So it's really just something I do just to do it without any concern at all for whether or not, you know, I'll be able to read that. But yeah, I think, Tony, it's a good time maybe to wrap things up. I can't think of anything else to say.
Unless you want to finish up with like a great little story, or not.
I mean, there's so many, you know, stories. I mean, I don't want to tell a retirement story right now.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's a good place to stop for right now. Maybe I'll tell a story in the next podcast.
Cool. Okay. Maybe that'll be the topic.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to do the outro or whatever it's called?
Okay. We are Charles Wiz, Tony Silva, two teachers talking everywhere, as I hope you know by now. And that's it. And we'll, we are on April 1st without an April Fool's prank, which wrinkles a bit. But anyway, that's how we go. I guess it's become a tradition, a non-April Fool's episode. So everybody be good, enjoy the break, and talk to you next month.
Okay, see you, Tony. Bye.
All right.